is Marielle, and I am the founder of Travel Experiences Reimagined, the podcast for travel enthusiasts, wanderlusts, and adventure seekers, craving to learn more about tours and excursions from all over the world through the eyes of a new tour guide or host each episode. Hi, everyone. When you think of a nomadic lifestyle, what comes to mind? Constantly traveling and on the road? Zero community and trying to figure it out? I am delighted to bring on Harry, founder of Nomad Mania, the ultimate hub for passionate travelers eager to explore the world extensively and meaningfully, venturing beyond the ordinary and obvious. Nomad Mania has a vibrant community platform, offering tools, information, and resources that empower your extraordinary adventures. Welcome, Harry. Did I miss anything?
Thank you so much. No, that's more or less it.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for being here. I think the Nomad community is so interesting. I think there's so much to unpack. But first and foremost, would love to know your background and would love to know just how you, like other businesses you've had, other companies you've worked for, other jobs you've had, just to give the listeners a little bit more of an idea about you.
Well, I'm half Greek and half South African British. I was born in London, but I grew up in Athens, Greece. So I'm used to the sun. People think that we're surrounded by sea, but if you live in the center of Athens, you actually don't necessarily see the sea all the time. So anyway, I grew up in Greece. I then went to study in the UK and in the Netherlands. I studied sociology and also did an MBA in general business. And then I worked for about 10 years in different positions lecturing, mainly human resources, organizational behavior. So I worked in different colleges. I really enjoyed working with students, shaping their futures. The feedback I got was that I was very strict, but also fair. I became friends with some of the students in the longer term. But of course, travel was always part of who I am. And eventually it took over. And I just had this dream of visiting every country. And it seemed impossible initially back in the day. It was more like a dream. But in the end, some dreams do become reality. And then once I did that, I decided, why not develop a platform for people like me? And that's how Nomad Mania came along.
Wow, that's amazing. You know, be careful what you wish for, right? So I love your story. I love that you grew up in so many different places, that you have a unique background to just so many like ethnicities and cultures and diversity. I think having that kind of background, I'm sure, has catalyzed you into Nomad Mania. And so why create this, right? Why create this community? Why create this platform? What was really the push or the aha moment for you?
Well, I think there are various reasons. Some of them have developed as I've gone along. They're not necessarily where I began. I think initially what happened was when I finished every country, and it seemed incredible to do that, I found that I was addicted and I needed new travel aims, like where do I go next kind of thing. And that's when I figured, why not divide countries deeper in order to motivate others and myself to have to travel more. And so the idea behind it initially, I would say, was at least partially geographic. Let's make a more challenging list than just every country. And right now we've got 1,301 regions that we kind of suggest as the main places one should go to. And that is very challenging. At the same time, when I had been working toward doing every country, I didn't know anyone else who was doing this. This was, you know, 20 years ago, and obviously technology hadn't developed so much. There was no Facebook yet, you know, so it wasn't necessarily so easy to find other like-minded people. And I thought Nomad Mania can also, you know, become a place where people like me find a home and find themselves. So these were the initial motivation. Now, as the years have gone along and the platform has developed, I would say there's been a lot more that has come into play. We are a nonprofit organization, and we also aim to help people who are less privileged to travel. We have awarded some travel scholarships to people from, developing countries who sometimes never traveled. We gave to law students from Rwanda their first trip abroad. They had never experienced the heat before because Rwanda is sort of relatively cool because it's at an elevation, and they had never seen the ocean before. So they went to Tanzania, and for us from far away, we're like, oh, Tanzania, Rwanda, that's, you know, more or less the same. But it's not at all. You know, they're two very different countries. And so these two law students were over the moon to be able to explore somewhere different. And this is the way that Nomad Mania has developed now, is more this vision to become democratic, to try to become a global platform and motivate people from everywhere and help the ones who are less fortunate, if you will. So that's the motivation now, but we still have the social angle, and it's become much more real now. We're no longer just virtual. Now we meet up in different places of the world. So we're really creating community face-to-face.
I love that. And I was going to ask you about this because I think community is such a hot, buzzy thing these days, right? I think more people want to create community versus just getting people together, right? They want to create a real sense of belonging. And I think with COVID, right, everything had to be very virtual. You were not allowed to go out. You were not allowed to meet people in person. And now we're seeing the shift of people wanting to be in person. And for anybody who is thinking about starting a community or wants to be part of a community, what are some things in your community that really stand out compared to other communities that, you know, people need to join Nomad Mania, right? Like, what is that reason why they need to be part of this community versus other communities?
Well, I think there's two things that are notable. Number one is that it's extremely democratic, in the sense that literally we have people of every demographic. It's definitely not necessarily for younger people or older people or middle-aged people. There are people of every budget, and there are people of every ethnicity, nationality, sexual orientation, political orientation. You know, I think that is what motivates me, to see people so incredibly different who still want to be part of the same community. And that doesn't happen that often, I think, with communities which are more specialized or maybe a little more elitist. Maybe, you know, some communities may have an entry barrier because you don't have the budget for them. You know, here, really, we're democratic. And obviously, the other thing is that I would say many of the people are more well-versed in the world, in geography, in tips about traveling. You know, it's very likely that we will meet and we will just casually start talking about Sierra Leone or Timor or, I don't know, Burundi. And I mean, this is not your average conversation topic when you're meeting people, you know, for a coffee somewhere. So I think this kind of desire to travel, this knowledge about distant, obscure places that, you know, the average person doesn't perhaps really care about, this is something that defines our community. So these two things, I think, make it truly unique.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that. And I think that is, everything you're saying is just so important when it comes to all aspects of travel. But being really fair, I think people don't want to deal with like political things or religious things these days. People just want to be part of something and be able to have a sense of belonging and not to be afraid to talk about certain things, right? Especially travel. I think travel is such a great common ground. You know, I joke all the time that one of the first questions I asked my now husband on a first date, I said, "Do you like to travel?" Because to me, that's really important. I love to travel. I love to go places. I love to do things. And it also just talks so much more about a person with how they're adaptable, how they're flexible, and how they can be spontaneous and also just adapt to any kind of environment. So I love what you're doing. I think it's really amazing. And I know you mentioned just—
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I want to go into, you've been to all different countries, all different regions of the world. And I think one of the things, and I would say from like a woman's perspective, obviously, look, we love to go to like Portugal and Greece and Spain and all these amazing countries, but people may not feel as comfortable going to some off the beaten path, right? Maybe not going to, let's say, Libya, or obviously right now, obviously wouldn't go to Ukraine, right? Or Somalia, or any, or Afghanistan, right? A lot of people would be really nervous to go to these kinds of places. Do you encourage, and I don't want to say dark travel, because I guess that's the right term, but do you encourage people to go to off the, like, truly off the beaten path countries? Do you tell people to go for it and try it? I guess I would love to know some of your thoughts around this, because nowadays people really want to go to these off the beaten path places, right? They want to go not to the touristy spots. They want to go somewhere that's really a bit different. But how much do you encourage, not encourage? What kind of parameters do you have, or what do you suggest? Because I think for a lot of people, that's really kind of nerve-wracking. So I'd love to hear some of your thoughts around this.
Well, thank you. This is a very interesting question. And it also touches on something that I'm especially interested in, which is the dual interest in dark tourism and the ethical perspective. These two things for me are very important. And in fact, I'm going to be giving a presentation on this subject, you know, ethics and dark tourism, later this year. First of all, obviously, you have the quote unquote easy places. And, you know, that's great. As you said, one can go to Portugal, one can go to, you know, Greece, which is where I'm from. One can do some countries in Latin America, like Chile, Argentina. They're relatively safe. But then you have many other countries which I think are daunting for people. First of all, I think it's important to differentiate places which are difficult and places which are dangerous. This is not necessarily the same thing. So if I bring up, for example, right now, a country like Angola, or a country like, say, Liberia, or perhaps a country like Bangladesh, okay, these are all countries which I would consider relatively safe, meaning that there's no war situation there. And that if you're a foreigner there, your chances of being okay are high, as long as obviously you take the normal precautions. And I would say that these countries are equally friendly to women as they would be to men, you know, more or less. So those countries are difficult. There may be a language barrier. There may be a lot of cultural issues. But that doesn't mean that they should make people afraid to go. And yet people wouldn't go. I don't think anyone would immediately think of Liberia as a destination for their next holiday. So this is one consideration. And I think we certainly do encourage people to explore beyond their comfort zone. We do encourage people to go to places where they will be uncomfortable, because I think that's how you learn about the world and that's how you learn about yourself. I think this is extremely important here, that travel is a way of learning more about who you are. You learn about your limitations. You learn about what you can and what you can't do. And I think here you need to go to these challenging countries, which are not necessarily dangerous. Now, in terms of the really dangerous places, We never encourage people to put their lives in danger, obviously, and I wouldn't do that myself. If I am traveling to a dangerous place, which I obviously have, I try to take all reasonable precautions. I read a lot about the place. And it's also important to remember that just like in the quote-unquote easy countries, you cannot say that the whole country is dangerous necessarily. There are some places which are safer and some which are not. You know, there are some areas of huge cities where no one would go because they know that the chances of being mugged are high. It's the same with many of these seemingly really dangerous countries. If we're talking about Libya, going to its capital, Tripoli, is not really that hard or dangerous. I mean, to be honest, Tripoli is a relatively straightforward city with its traffic, you know, not that much going on, you know, people are out, there are cafes. So although Libya may have this reputation of danger, and it certainly had its share of dark times, I would say Tripoli itself is pretty easy once you get the bureaucracy and the visa. So, I think it's important to always look, where is the danger really? I mean, in Ukraine, obviously, you have a war which is engulfing the whole country. But at the same time, Western Ukraine and the area around Lviv is much less affected. The chances of anyone being involved directly in an attack there are extremely slim. Obviously, going to Eastern Ukraine, which is a war zone, is madness, you know, but maybe Western Ukraine is a chance to understand what's going on there without putting your life in grave danger. And that might be worthwhile after all. So that's my take on this issue.
First of all, I love this. And I really just want to unpack difficult versus dangerous. I think that is a perfect way to sum up travel that could be a little bit nerve-wracking for somebody, because at the end of the day, we can get through difficult things, but we're not going to put ourselves in danger, God forbid, of anything terrible, right? With the war in Ukraine or with the war going on in Israel, those are not places you should go right now, right? Doesn't mean they're going to be in war forever, but it is being a little bit logical and mindful of that. And I really appreciate that you not only tell probably just other people, but your community, that be mindful of difficult, be mindful of dangerous, and just understand the differences. So I really just wanted to caveat on that and say that really is just awesome. So thank you for sharing that insight.
Yeah. I think if I may add here, there is also an ethical dimension apart from the danger dimension. I think with some countries, it's important that people make their choices consciously. You know, for example, if you're going to go to Israel now, you know, it's not only that it's dangerous, it's a matter of what message is that sending. I would say it's the same if you go to Russia now. You know, what message does that send if you're posting about it? I'm not saying don't go, because I don't believe in telling people or anybody where they should or shouldn't go. But I think often when we travel, we need to be aware of what that might mean and what message it'll send to our own communities if we're posting on social media. And if people are aware of that and then make a conscious choice, that's fine. Good for them, you know.
Sure. I appreciate that. And it's funny you talk about ideas of different countries where people have this one idea of a place. Like, perfect example for me, I remember going to Vietnam with my dad years ago. And I can't tell you how many people said, it's dangerous, it's scary, you shouldn't go there. And I went, and I actually felt safer there than I do in America. People right. There were so kind, so loving. People were just really thoughtful. People went above and beyond, you know, into like Thailand and all these different countries I went to. And it was amazing. It was really an amazing experience. And you need people sometimes like yourself to go to these places and almost to be like an advocate for them, to say, yeah, this place is safe. This place is good. I've been there on the ground. This isn't a book. This isn't TV. This isn't, you know, just making up things. I've been to this country. I've met these people. I've walked around. I've seen it for myself. And so I love that you're able to also talk about your own experiences too, to really iterate to someone like, yeah, this is a good place. This isn't a bad place. And this, you know, is somewhere you can travel to. So I love that. I want to talk about, I did some research on you, and it looks like you have two books that you wrote. And I'd love a summary about each of them. And for the titles, it's The Curious Case of William Beckeland, Harry's Investigation of Recent Real-Life Events Surrounding a Traveling Con Man, and Welcome to the Hotel Nomad Mania, a work of fiction based on the travel community. Are you able to give a little bit of an overview and some insight, so if somebody's interested to read one of these books, they kind of have a little bit of a teaser of what to expect?
Sure. Well, what I find funny is that if you Google me on Google, I come up as an author, you know, and that seems to be a bit strange to me, because I really don't consider myself an author. But, you know, yes, I've always been good at writing. I enjoyed that at school and university. You know, I was always a good essay writer. And then in 2017, our community, well, our general travel community, but also Nomad Mania itself, were faced with someone who it appeared was a scammer. And to cut a long story short, this was someone who presented himself as an heir to a fortune. His behavior implied that he was extremely wealthy, and he acted the part very well. And he managed to convince everybody of his credentials and organized trips, some of which mysteriously got cancelled without refunds being given. And ultimately, when it became obvious that something wasn't right there, I took it upon myself to discover the truth, which was not easy to find. But the truth was that he was from a humble background and had changed his identity, probably in order to infiltrate our community and make money off us. We've never really understood the motivations. So this first book, The Curious Case of William Bakeland, is about this. It's partial travelogue because we did have many trips with him to really exotic places. It starts with a trip down to Antarctica. There's then a trip to the Russian Arctic. There's trips to Central African Republic and East Timor. There's a lot of different environments for the book. And then the second part turns a bit detective story, outlining how I did the research, what I found, and what the effect of this was on our travel community. Of course, it is very subjective. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I haven't read it for a while, but it's written in the first person from my perspective. This was a case that really shocked people, and I would say it really made us all question, who do we trust? How well do you need to know someone in order to trust them? And he's still free. I mean, nothing happened to him in the end, because it seems that the authorities didn't really pursue this. So that's the first book. And the second book is a bit of a joke, really. It's more, it's fiction. And I took real people and, with their permission, fictionalized them and wrote an Agatha Christie type murder mystery where one by one people get bumped off, including myself for that matter. That was fun, murdering myself in the book. And that's called Welcome to the Hotel Nomad Mania, with the title obviously inspired by a well-known song. It's just a murder mystery, but it takes place in more than 20 different locations. Again, I mean, it's mainly aimed at people who really like travel. I have focused as much as I could on a description of the places. So, you know, you will travel with the book. It goes from Algeria to Suriname to Nauru to, you know, Switzerland, all over the globe, very different places. And one by one, people get murdered. And, you know, it does follow a sort of classic Agatha Christie style plot until the end. And that was very lighthearted. And I think this whole book came about as my reaction to both COVID and then the war in Ukraine, you know, and all this heaviness from all this misery and difficulty that the world is in. And I thought that for my mental well-being, I need to focus my energies on something really lightweight, which will make me feel good. And somehow I came up with this book. And, you know, for quite a few months, it kept me entertained, coming up with a ridiculous plot. I think whoever reads it or needs to read it without expecting something sophisticated. But if you're able to do that, I think it's fun.
Thank you for sharing that. I love both of them. I think both creative and, to your point, through COVID, I think a lot of people came out of it having different perspectives and different thought processes, and maybe going through writing or getting more creative or whatever it is. And I love that was your outlet to just write a book. I think that's awesome. I wish I was a writer, but I commend anybody for doing that, because I think that's really cool. I want to shift gears for a little bit. When it comes to being a digital nomad, I think social media touts a lot of it as being this like glamorous, amazing, beautiful life, right? And obviously some people post vulnerable posts of behind the scenes of what it's really like. I think one of the things that catches people off guard with being a digital nomad is trying to figure out the remote work, right? Working for a company, starting your own business, whatever it is. I think it could be really difficult for somebody to want the digital nomad life, right? Like, that's the end result. That's the goal. But it's getting there that can be really difficult for somebody, and to find the job or to find the career that makes sense for them. Do you have any advice on like really good career options, really good entrepreneurial options for somebody to start their own business, to create this digital nomad lifestyle? Because I think it could be really overwhelming, and with so much hype and news and, you know, just information out there, it can be really hard to like sift through it and know what's real and what's not real.
I totally agree. Well, let me be honest with you, Marielle. You know, Nomad Mania doesn't really make money. We are a nonprofit. And although we are very well known in our segment, this is not how I make a living. So I am a digital nomad who doesn't make money by being a digital nomad, you know.
No, I understand that, but like careers and jobs, right? Like there's a lot of people who are like influencers, or there's a lot of people who maybe are lawyers as digital nomads. And I guess from all the people you've met, right, through your travels and through the community that you've built within Nomad Mania, there's probably lots of people working different jobs in different industries or owning different companies. And I'd love to know if you had any insight for somebody who wants to be, you know, a digital nomad, but wants to know what kind of career or job or business that they should start to even consider like getting into this, right? Because I think it could be really overwhelming.
Well, I think an obvious one, and many people are doing this, is being content writers. You know, if you're good in writing, there are many jobs out there which require you to create content, and that could be social media related or maybe not. You know, it could be travel related, but not necessarily. You know, you could do research articles, you know, or on topics such as the environment, which is becoming more and more important, you know, sustainability, maybe things like mental health. All kinds of writing are becoming quite popular as they relate to digital media. And for sure, there's a lot of work there. Other people I know are in IT. So, you know, programming or anything to do with that, which can also be done remotely, is extremely popular. And I think, you know, in these two directions, we cover two different types of people. You have the ones who might be a bit more theoretically or linguistically oriented. And then, you know, on the IT side, you have people with a more perhaps logical or practical orientation. These are the two that I am directly familiar with. I think in both cases, the key to being a happy digital nomad is to find the balance and know what the limits are. You know, I think on the one hand, you need to be dedicated to the job, because if you're not good enough, you're going to, you know, you're not going to make it long on the job. So you don't want to, you know, ignore the job because you're traveling. But at the same time, if you are a lover of travel and you do want to change environments, you don't want to end up in a new environment where you have so much work, but you don't have time to enjoy it and explore the place. So I think that is very important, to know how much you can do and to learn what your ideal output is and combine that with the requirements of the position. I personally often find that I am not very well, you know, I'm quite an organized person, but I find it difficult to organize the work I'm doing on Nomad Mania and to travel at the same time. And inevitably what happens with me is sometimes I'm focusing on the traveling and sometimes I'm focusing on the work. Doing those two together always confuses me. But I'm older, I'm already 52. So I think people who are younger are probably more adaptable and more able to combine the two, and probably need less sleep as well. So that's a good thing.
That's fair. But I think really this is, you know, translating to anything in life, no matter if you're a digital nomad or not. I think balance is so important. And I'm starting to, you know, I have my own business and I'm a bookkeeper, and I just believe in an integrated balance, right? I used to believe work-life balance when you work the 9 to 5, and totally get it. I think that's important too. But now owning my own business, I've shifted to more of an integrated balance, where I may not have a 9 to 5, but I could work 7 a.m., but then at noon I could take a lunch, you know, 2-hour lunch break, right? So I have a different kind of perspective on this. But I think at the end of the day, it's finding your balance and what makes sense for you. And it's not going all in on work and it's not going all in on play. It's kind of finding that balance of, to your point, don't neglect the work. That's how you make the money. And you need money to have experiences, right? So it is finding that middle ground for anybody at any age, at any time, anywhere. And that can translate, like I said, to anybody, whether you're a digital nomad or not. So I appreciate your insight on that. Now, when it comes to, obviously, you traveling all over the world, going to scary places, exciting places, dangerous places, you know, off the beaten path, are you able to name 3 to 5 places that are not typical places you would think to go, but they're places that you think more people should be aware of and know about to check out and visit?
Yeah, I can name more than 3 to 5. Almost every place I go, you know. Nowadays, I've become the kind of person who cannot go to the popular places anymore. You know, if you put me in Barcelona or Venice, I am really unhappy, you know, and I just can't deal with it. Anyway, the world is amazing. There's so much to offer. Off the top of my head, I'm going to Romania tomorrow. So I will name Romania. I think it's not the most off the beaten track place, because it is known for Dracula and Transylvania and the castles. But, you know, you've got a whole area in northern Romania that is kind of straddling the border with Ukraine, and that is called Maramureș. And that is in many ways considered the cultural heart of Romania, even though it's extremely rural. You've got a lot of wooden churches, and sometimes it seems like the pace of life is the same as it was in 1880. You know, you still have horses and people going around in old carriages, a very, very sort of lackadaisical and relaxed way of life, it seems. Although I'm sure that for the locals, it's really hard. They rely on the land. But there's a lot of very nice ecotourism there. You can stay in sort of homestays. And even if you don't speak Romanian, the people are so welcoming, so friendly. Great food, homemade food, you know, very earthy type of food. Beans, you know, things like that. So I don't think that many people go to northern Romania, and I can absolutely recommend it. Then in Africa, I was recently in Angola for the third time. Angola has recently become visa-free for passport holders of Western countries. So now is a very good time to go. You just land there and in you are. This is a country that had a civil war going on for many years, and it was totally off. And now it's kind of trying to come in from the cold. It has some beautiful beaches, and it's got a lot of interesting urban architecture from the Portuguese time, because Angola was a Portuguese colony. So you've got a sort of European style of city planning, But at the same time, it's all very African. I would say it's got a lot of natural beauty as well. In the south, you've got a couple of national parks. You've got dunes, sand dunes, which are really pretty. So it's a country that I think will become popular over time, but it's only just beginning, and I can really recommend it. And a third one, well, you know what? I recently had a road trip in the States, and I did 24 of the states by car. And obviously, as I was doing them, I did Texas and California, which were the largest of the ones I did. But at the same time, for example, I went through Wyoming. I don't know how many of the listeners of this program have been to Wyoming. I did not go to Yellowstone because it was too cold, too early in the season. But you know what? At the end of the day, of the 24 states I went to, I concluded I liked Wyoming best. There was something extremely beautiful in the expanse of it. And the people in Wyoming were so friendly with me. I don't know if it was the English accent or, you know, that they obviously figured I'm not from around there, but you know, the people and the food. Now, if you're ever in Douglas, Wyoming, please go to the trading post and have the roast beef. I have never had a better roast beef, and the gravy, oh my goodness. So
you know, Wyoming, you don't necessarily need to go that far to go off the beaten track and, you know, experience things which are really wonderful. So I think people often think that off the beaten track or travel means going very, very far or, you know, to a totally different culture. It could be much nearer than you think. And you still get people who are very different to what, you know, is usual for you. So that's the three that I can come up with now.
I love that. I love the eclectic list. I love the differences. And I think you make a really good point for people who may not be able to afford to international travel or, you know, go to far places. I think it's nice to sometimes think about maybe going a state or two over, right? Maybe going even a few towns over, check out something different, meet different people. You really don't know what to expect, what you're going to find, how different people are, and something really beautiful that you can explore. So I love that you mentioned that as well, because for people that may be nervous to get on a plane or they have restrictions to get on a plane, you can get in a car, you can get in a bus, maybe you have to get in a ferry. Whatever it is, there's other ways that you can travel to see like tons of beautiful places in the world. So I really appreciate you sharing that list. And I have two more questions before we wrap up. My first question is, you seem like a savvy traveler. And for a lot of people these days, I think travel is becoming more and more expensive. Especially with like airfares and such due to inflation and maybe gas prices and what's going on with Boeing and all these other things. But I'd love to know some ways that you recommend for people to maybe save a little bit of money and not break the bank completely on travel that could help somebody think about maybe staying right at an Airbnb or at a homestay or find a local tour guide or go to the local place for food. Like any recommendations you have to make someone feel like, okay, maybe I can spend a little less here and try to cut some costs, but still have an amazing experience.
Hmm. Well, Nomad Mania is a good place to start because, you know, I mean, our community has grown so much. And really, I see that people are staying at each other's homes, you know, and are visiting each other. And obviously that helps, not only in terms of lowering the cost, but also getting to know the culture much better, because we have members from a lot of different places. Now, a similar platform, well, it's not similar, but I'm sure you've heard of Couchsurfing.
Yes.
It used to be popular. It used to be really popular, I think, about 15 years ago when I was on it. I mean, I stayed, I met some amazing people through Couchsurfing and stayed in their homes. And really, it was a way to understand the countries better. It was, for me, it wasn't so much to save on the hotel only, you know, it was to meet the locals, but that's still around. And I think you still get a certain amount of good people. Of course, I have heard negative things as well. And one must always use common sense whenever you're trusting anyone in life. So, you know, but I do in general think that people, most people are kind and good. Another way, now, I know that in the US, you don't necessarily have very good or very popular public transport. But in a lot of the rest of the world, this is, you know, the usual way of going around. And often it's extremely inexpensive. I think people shouldn't be afraid to use the local way of going around, even in Africa. You're going to save a lot of money and you're going to meet really interesting people who are very curious about you. And I think the best stories come from journeys on, you know, rickety transport in Africa or, you know, the train in the former Soviet countries where you get to experience all the locals. So these ways of going around are much better than flying, which is really soulless and I think should be used as the last resort rather than as the main thing. Of course, for people who don't have much time, I guess flying is inevitable, but you know. And then obviously in terms of saving on other things, I think you should always avoid food in the center of towns or, you know, where you believe tourists are. Try to check out where do the locals go, because it could be that just a couple of blocks down the road, there's this eatery where only locals go, and probably the food is much cheaper and much better, more authentic, you know. But then when you're traveling, often you focus only on the main tourist zone and ultimately fall for a tourist trap. So, you know, these are all pretty straightforward, pretty easy. It's true that travel has become more expensive. I think for people who are budget conscious, also where you go is a consideration. There are still countries which are relatively cheap. You know, Southeast Asia is still a good deal. Albania or North Macedonia are extremely budget friendly and not really that visited. So, you know, you really have some good options there. And some African countries can also be economical if you know how to travel.
Thank you. I love that. And all really good tips. And I think that's really helpful for someone who is the budget conscious traveler. And again, more of a reason to join Nomad Mania. So that's amazing. And my last question before we wrap up, I typically ask this question to tour guides of how do you want people to feel after they experience your tour? I'll word it slightly differently to say, how do you want people to feel after they join Nomad Mania and they're part of Nomad Mania?
Oh, that's a good one. I've never been asked that. Well, I'd like people to feel, wow, I just learned that the world is so big and that there's so many incredible places I can still explore. And let me start by picking a place on the map that I didn't know about and seeing if I can go there on my next trip and discovering what I'll find and what I'll learn from that. I think that would be a very good first impression of Nomad Mania before someone delves deeper into it.
Thank you for sharing. I love the wow. And yes, I think nowadays we think with social media and the internet, the world's really small, but I really do believe the world is big, especially when you travel 24 hours to go to a different country. I definitely think the world's quite a big place. But I never like to wrap these up. Harry, you have been an amazing guest. Loved talking to you about your background, all the places you've lived, all the places you've traveled, how you started Nomad Mania, and really your why behind it. Talking about dark travel, your books that you wrote, and just talking all things travel, right? Kind of some places that you love off the beaten path. And just making people feel really encouraged and inspired to be a digital nomad. I think nowadays it's something people want, but they might be scared and they're unsure and they feel nervous. But to join a community like Nomad Mania is a no-brainer for anybody who wants to be a digital nomad and at least have the starting ground and a beginning point to start that beautiful journey. But I'd love for you to just shamelessly plug away your social media, your website, and most importantly, how can people be part of Nomad Mania community?
Well, you just go to nomadmania.com or you can download the app and then just, you know, sign up and you can start filling in the areas you've been to and do get in touch. Our team always answers every message. So we're very happy to get to know whoever joins if they reach out to us. And then we've got meetings and events in various different places. If we're looking at the US, I believe there's one in Philadelphia coming up. There's also one in Toronto, and there will be one in Nashville. So, you know, we do have events and anyone can join. As far as I'm concerned, I am not really the most proactive person out there. I am on Instagram and my handle is Harry Nomad. That's 10 letters, Harry Nomad altogether. But that's basically it. I am, you know, I prefer to be doing the traveling rather than to be writing about it.
I understand. Totally get that. But again, I love the community that you've built. And I think really, the point of community is for everybody to rally and get to know each other and to help each other and to answer those questions that you may not know, but somebody else would know, right? So I think that's the beauty of community. So that's wonderful. And again, thank you so much for being an awesome guest.
Thank you so very much. Take care.
Thank you so much for tuning into Travel Experiences Reimagined podcast. Click that subscribe button to learn more about a new tour guide or host each week, where you'll find out more about how they got started, talking in detail about their experience, and any fun facts and tips that they would like to share. Do you have an experience that you would like others to learn about, whether it is a tour, excursion, adventure, or experience? Fill out a form on our website at www.travelexperiencesreimagined.com for a chance to share your story and experience so others can learn more about what you have to offer.